This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still, I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. It's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community.
You've heard the podcast, now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. As always, I'm going to say it again, it's because we mean it. It is fabulous to have you listening. Thank you, wherever you may be on your alcohol-free journey. You might be curious at this stage, you might be dipping in for the first time, trying Sober October. If you are, big up your bad self, stick with it, just flipping go for it. You might be completely alcohol free, you might be nailing alcohol free life, you might be struggling, doesn't matter. Wherever you are on this journey, on this adventure, it's really fabulous to have you listening. If you are listening for the first time, an introduction as to who we are. My name is Sharon Hartley, hurtling towards 50 years old. When the flip did that happen? 5 years alcohol-free. Yay! Hands down, the best decision I ever made in my mid-40s. I thought it'd be crap, to be honest. This boring, dull 90-day break from living my best life, partying and drinking. What a crock of that was. It all changed. Fell in love with sobriety and it's just changed everything, and so much for the better. We wang on about sobriety week in, week out. I don't do it on my own. Ben Anderson, how the hell are you?
Fine, thanks, Ben. 35, Liverpool, married to Jem, dad to Leo. Let's get the administrative bits done and dusted nice and quickly, because today's guest, God, they're always our favourite, aren't they, Shaz? We love speaking to the superstar celebs. We've got a big one booked for our Christmas special. Can we say it?
Oh, we got now.
Oh God,
stop it.
It's so exciting.
No.
We love talking to the superstar. We love talking to the MPs like we did last week. How highbrow are we?
No.
But we absolutely, more than anything, love speaking to our friends from the Over the Influence community. And today's guest is a great friend of ours. We've known her for, I can't believe she's nearly 2 years alcohol free.
No. Oh. Today.
Oh, is it actually today?
It's today.
Oh, yes. Okay. It's Maz. Hi, Maz. Shaz, by the way, are you ready with your Auntie Sharon routine to say how proud you are because Maz is young and glamorous? And
I was just saving it for a little bit later on. Yes. Ben, you are 1,000,000% right. We love chatting to everybody on the podcast, but we always say it's extra special when we've got a friend, a community member joining us on the pod. And today it's a big day. Because not only has Maz said yes, all right then, I'll do this. Maz from Surrey is 2 years flipping alcohol free today. Congratulations, Maz. Big up your bad self. How the hell are you feeling?
Great. How exciting. Thanks, guys. You're so lovely. Where has 2 years gone? I have absolutely no idea. You blink and it's gone. Can't believe it.
I can't believe it because I'm trying to work out the timeline here, because I'm sure that we met when you were really early days alcohol free, but has the community been going for 2 years?
Yes, Ben. In fact, it's been going for 800 and something days. And the reason I know this is because Neil, that was on the pod a few months ago, he always checks in with his day count or a milestone, and he'll ping me a message and say, Shaz, did you know the community is 800 days old? So we were 2 years old in July, Ben.
Of course we were, because it's 2023.
Yeah. You've lost a year.
Who am I? Where am I?
Baby brain.
I know. So 2 years today, so that would have been, we're recording this on the 3rd of October, 2023. So that is October, autumn 2021. What was going on with you then, Maz?
I actually know exactly what was going on because I have documented my alcohol-free journey through the medium of videos.
Oh, this is interesting.
Yeah, so I know that a lot of people take photos. I've been videoing myself. So the first video I did was on the 3rd of October and I was out in my garden and I had the worst hangover because every hangover was the worst hangover. And the night before I'd had some friends round for a few drinks, they'd left and I was out in the garden. It was quite a nice warm day. And I just remember laying there thinking to myself, what on earth am I doing here again? Well, I felt horrendous. My head was hurting. My body was hurting. And I just thought, right, something's got to give. So I got my phone out and I recorded myself maybe sort of 2-3 minute message just talking about how I felt at the moment. And yeah, just saying to myself that I don't think I can do this anymore. So that was that.
Do you ever play that back and watch that first video?
I do. And I have done recently. I'm going to watch it. I haven't watched it yet today. But I will watch it again when I've watched it. I just get so sad for myself, Shaz, because I think as time goes by, you forget how bad it was.
Yeah.
And I think that happens quite quickly, even within a week. Like if you're a weekend drinker, by the time Thursday, Friday comes, you forget how horrendous you felt at the weekend. And you're like, oh, it wasn't so bad. I was making it up. So recording these videos has been brilliant because it really takes you back to how it was. And I can hear the desperation in my voice of like, and the confusion as to why I kept ending up in that same position time and again, even though I didn't want to, and even though I knew that it wasn't good for me. But it's really lovely actually having all of the subsequent videos because I've documented my journey and then I can literally see my face transforming and changing. And my attitude and my view on things is changing a little bit as well. So that's a really nice nice way to be able to kind of track that progress.
I think that is a really brave thing to do as well, because, you know, when we're feeling at our worst, I think the last thing we want to do is flipping document it. Do you know what I mean? Did you do that as well when you were drinking, Maz, or maybe the morning after or the mornings after the night before? Is this something you did specifically at that moment in time?
I did that specifically at that moment in time. And I remember my thinking, and it's because I can talk myself out of situations, right? And I know myself really well. So these messages were from me to me going, I know what you're like. You know, we've been here before. I'm telling you now, future Maz, I want you to stop doing this because current Maz is having a really horrible time. So I knew that if I videoed myself and the message was coming from me, that I'm more than likely to listen to it.
It's a powerful thing to do.
It is.
You know, we do that. So Millie, my stepdaughter, 10 years old, she has to go and get like blood tests quite regularly. And she hated the, you know, getting the needle in her arm and the blood coming, you know, all of that. So we took her once and she kind of, after she was like, you know what, that wasn't as bad today as I thought. So we got her to video, we videoed her saying that to herself so that we could show it to her. Because, you know, you can't deny your own thoughts and feelings, can you? You're like, that is actually me. That is me saying these words. I mean, Maz, you said, you know, it was a Saturday night with the girls, wasn't it? And then you woke up the next day, filmed that video. Tell us about your life at that point. So kind of social life, but also, you know, work life too. Like, who were you in October 2021?
That's a big question. My social life. So I didn't go out that much, to be honest. I was quite settled. I was quite happy sort of staying in, did the old just going for walks and things like that. But I sort of socialized maybe once a month or so. But I moved away from Norfolk to live in Surrey, and my friends were all still back in Norfolk. So whenever I was socializing, I had to sort of drive to Norwich to see all my friends. And that only happened sort of once a month or once every 5 weeks. And that was normally house parties more than anything else. And festivals, I quite like a festival. So I was a bit of a festival goer. Yeah. And sort of outside of that, I wasn't really a pub person. I very rarely went to the pubs, and my clubbing days are way past me, way too old to go to.
Thank goodness.
Yeah. Oh, God, I couldn't even imagine stepping into a nightclub now. I'd be like, the fuck is this? It's
not for me either, Maz. No. Not for me.
So, yeah, I used to, most of my socialising was when I did the long trips to Norfolk, and then festivals. Work was okay. I'd actually not long started a job that I was really enjoying. And actually, on the surface of it, everything was great. You know, I was fit and healthy, exercising regularly, eating all of the healthy things, you know, looking after my mental health and my well-being. My job was good. You wouldn't think that there was anything going on. But obviously there was, because I was continuing to drink. So
do you mean, so were you drinking kind of once a month when you were going to Norwich, or?
Yeah.
Right. So it wasn't kind of, you were a daily drinker?
Not at all. And again, I think when I said to people that I was quitting alcohol, they were like, well, you never really drink that often anyway. You know, you sort of tend to only drink sort of at the big events. So people were a little bit miffed as to why I gave up alcohol. But the way that I see it, it's not really so much how much you drink and how often. It's really the impact that it has on you. It's your personal Absolutely. Relationship with alcohol.
Too right.
And what it feels like for you on the inside. And for me, my relationship with alcohol was the last thing in my life that I couldn't crack it. It didn't matter how hard I tried. It was that last thing that I couldn't get a handle on. And every time I got drunk, and every time I woke up with a hangover, I felt so frustrated with myself that, like, why am I continuing to do this? And for a really long time, like we all do, you start to question whether you're an alcoholic. You go online, you do the little Google. It's like, I can't get a handle on this. What's wrong with me? And what I've come to realize is that there was nothing wrong with me. It's just what alcohol does.
It's so important, that, isn't it, Shaz, as a message? Like, and we talk about this all the time, you know, units, for example, as a way of measuring how much alcohol you're drinking. How helpful is that? Everybody's different, etc. But it doesn't matter what kind of drinker you are, if it's having a damaging effect on your physical or mental health. For you, Maz, it sounds like it was having a damaging effect more on your mental than physical health. Then that's a good enough reason to go, I need to stop this. And isn't it interesting that you're drinking once a month, but still you're having that conversation of, why can't I not do this? Like that, I think that's so interesting.
It is. And it is. I think everybody's relationship with alcohol is very personal to them. What I noticed is that whenever I had drank alcohol, I kind of felt like it robbed me of all my inner resources. Like it robbed me of all the tools and everything that I'd worked so hard to get in terms of looking after myself. As soon as I drank alcohol, it kind of took all of that away. And I think that's where I started to mistake that it was me that was the issue rather than this substance that I was drinking. And alcohol is because it's so well integrated into society, you never think it's that, do you? You never think it's the drinking that's contributing to these issues. You're like, well, no. It's because this happened in my life, or it's because I'm stressed at work, or it's because of this, that, and the other. You rarely think, well, actually, maybe it's, you know, those few glasses of wine that I'm having however often. So it's easier to think that you're the problem rather than pointing the finger of blame on the substance.
You're just making me smile. I'll just quickly share something with you, and I will keep the person that shared this with me anonymous because I know this person will be listening to this episode. When you were talking there about, you know, when it's not going well in terms of drinking alcohol, and the person I'm referring to drank very differently to the way you're explaining, Maz. And we were on an event recently, and this person said to me, we were both really laughing about this a lot, drinking, you know, vast amounts of alcohol, making himself quite poorly with it. And he says he ended up blaming the lattes from the garage that he was drinking. It was causing him to have an upset stomach. It was like, you know, it could never be the vast amounts of lager followed by a bottle of rum or whatever it is. And we were saying how ridiculous, how utterly ridiculous it is. This person, by the way, is very, very sober and doing amazing now. But he's got the ability to look back and laugh and point the finger at everything else in life. Of course it was the lattes from the flipping garage. I mean, it sounds ridiculous, doesn't it? But because alcohol is so ingrained, it's everywhere you turn. It's a massive part of life for somebody to put their hands up and go, actually, you know what? At whatever level you're at, it's not serving me now. It, crikey, it solves so many problems, doesn't it?
It does. And I think either heard it or read it somewhere. I think it said if, maybe in one of the many Quit Lit books, which I've read, because there's this issue of willpower, isn't it? I think you're always told that it's a lack of willpower. Well, you know, just stop, but you lack willpower. Or if that was the case, then surely you would lack willpower everywhere else as well. You know, and I was one of these people where actually I had brilliant willpower and determination in lots of other areas in my life, except for this one area. So you kind of have to stop and think to yourself going, okay, is it really about willpower? Is it really about me not being strong enough, or is there something else in it? So, yeah, and I think as soon as I realized that it was actually the substance, that made my life a lot easier, actually.
I was just going to just go back to something Maz said a few minutes ago when Ben asked you, Maz, about what you were like in October 2021. Mm. And you said that, you know, anybody looking in would say, she's got it together. Good job. Nice social life, you know, ticking along nicely. But you said that was on the surface. Mm. What was going on below the surface, if you're happy to share?
I don't really know. Well, I know now. I didn't back then. But I just remember feeling like I was functioning at about 80% all of the time. And I didn't know why. I can't tell you enough how hard I was trying to be the best version of myself, you know, by looking after myself. I'm very proud to say that I've had therapy, and it was bloody brilliant therapy. So I really thought I had it all sorted. But there was, I don't know, everything just seemed to fall short. I was always at 80%. I never really fully enjoyed life, you know. My mental health was okay most of the time. But whenever I drank alcohol, it completely plummeted. It put me in a very, very low mood. My brain took me to places where I felt scared, and I genuinely didn't know that my mind could take me there. But in all of that, there was this frustration that I couldn't feel better no matter what I tried. There was nothing that I could, there was no amount of running. There was no amount of going to the gym. There was no amount of cold water swimming that seemed to make me feel like I'm at 100%. I always felt like something was missing. So yeah, even though I was happy, I wasn't fulfilled. And the other thing I remember, which is probably one of the biggest differences, is that I felt lonely pretty much all the time. Even if I'd gone and spent the weekend with my friends, I actually remember thinking to myself one time, I'd gone to my Norwich lot, shout out to them. And I'd gone there because I was feeling lonely and like I'd missed them. And it's a really long drive. It's like three, 4 hour drive. And then I'd gone there. I think there was a house party. We all drank alcohol. And on the drive back, I realized that I still felt lonely. I was like, I don't actually feel socially replenished. I'll spend time with the people who I love and who I really enjoy being with. But that sense of loneliness, that sense of emptiness hadn't been replenished. And it's because by drinking alcohol, I wasn't able to actually connect to people properly. And I think what became apparent once I removed alcohol is that alcohol prevented me from connecting to everything properly, not just the people around me, but my environment and myself as well. It was just robbing me of the ability to fully experience everything that needed to be experienced for me to feel connected.
Maz.
Yes.
If that's your real name. I mean, I know it's your real name, but we're not publishing your surname here. And it's because, you know, there's an element of anonymity that you'd like to keep for this recording. And I imagine that's because of the line of work that you're in. Yeah. I'd really like to talk about work, and I don't know how you'd like to describe what you do and to keep that air of mystery around Maz. But can we talk about it, or is that something you'd rather?
Maybe we can talk about it. I've prepared.
Okay, because this was one of the most interesting conversations, I think, that we had, especially in your early days of removing alcohol. Don't leave it to me because I'll mess it up. Can you tell us in your words what area you work in?
So I work in the area of mental health. So I'm a mental health worker. I do work for the wonderful NHS, and I have done for the best part of nearly 20 years. I'm very proud of that. Love the NHS. I remember the first one of the first conversations. I felt like on, I think it was the Zoom, I'd got I'd logged on and I had my camera off. It was proper secret squirrel, and it's because I was I was a bit concerned about coming to the community as a mental health professional, because as a mental health professional, I'm supposed to have it all figured out, right? I have all of the strategies, all of the knowledge, and all of the understanding to be able to manage all of these life's challenges and not need any additional support. But also on an almost daily basis, I was supporting people through difficulties that I understood to be caused by alcohol. So it was a bit of a tricky dynamic for me to join this community and actually to talk openly about my own struggles with it. And I think that's probably what kept me quiet for a really long time, because I really wasn't sure how to start the conversation and how it was going to be received.
I remember you saying to me that you felt in some conversations that you felt quite hypocritical because you were helping people with difficulties that you felt like, as you said earlier, you couldn't quite crack this bit yourself. Yeah. Why do you think that? Because obviously, you know, mental health, alcohol, these are conversations. It doesn't matter who you are or what you do. Mm-hmm. Why do you feel like people who, for example, work for the NHS, because we've got, you know, in the community now, we've got a few doctors and, you know, nurses, it's people who work in all different areas, you know, but why do you think that people who work in that environment find it difficult to open up about stuff like this? So, for example, not just mental, but let's be clear and focus it on alcohol. Mm.
I think it's you'd be surprised to hear, or maybe not, that there is a lot of stigma within mental health. Certainly within, that's been my experience as a mental health worker, there is a lot of stigma among the workforce and people saying, I'm having a hard time, I'm struggling, regardless of what that is, be it around alcohol or be it around their mental health. It does go back to the, well, you're the expert, you're the professional. Why, you know, why are you having a hard time? You should be able to figure this out yourself. I also think it has a lot to do with the general perception of alcohol consumption by society. And if you say that it's problematic in your life, people will assume that you are an alcoholic and you have a problem with it. And I think people might be worried about that threatening their job as well. I think there is very little understanding in society still, unfortunately, about people's relationship with alcohol. And if you choose to remove it, it doesn't mean that you are dependent on it or that you're an alcoholic. But there is, I think, still that stigma.
When you say worried about their job, like, who are they worried about there? Are they worried about patients and their thoughts? Are they worried about the chain of command?
Both.
Is it both?
Yeah, I think both, and absolutely. But I think that it's just generally about being negatively judged by other people. You know, if somebody puts up their hand and says, I'm struggling, I'm having a hard time, I think it's just any negative judgment that it, you know, people would be worried about. And there is kind of like this unspoken code among mental health professionals that you don't bring your personal problems to work. Right. You are just the professional. You put on this persona and you don't share what's going on for you personally. That's kind of for you to deal with outside of work. So there's that element of it as well, is that you're not encouraged to bring yourself and things that you're finding difficult into the work environment for obvious reasons. But it does kind of contribute, I think, to people not wanting to come forward with things that they're having a hard time with.
Over the last 2 years then, Maz, and again, as Ben said, you know, only share as much as you're comfortable with. How would you say that removing alcohol has impacted you as someone that works in mental health?
That's a really big question. Firstly, how I relate to people who I see is completely different, right? I think because when you've been through it, when you have that kind of lived experience, it is very different. And I think I've been able to have far more open, honest, and truthful conversations with the people who I see. And I think I have far more empathy and understanding around what's actually going on. Because I think I also fell victim to that judgment of like, well, it's a lack of willpower. If they really wanted to give up, they would have done. But now that I've been through that process myself, and I know that simply isn't true, I'm able to empathize and understand people a little bit more, which ironically is actually having more of a positive impact on people's outcomes and on their journey with alcohol themselves than me sitting there going, well, you need to quit drinking, and it's as simple as that. So,
and the textbook says,
yeah, exactly that. So I think it's massively impacted on how I work and relate to people, but also my work colleagues as well. So I've certainly in the last year, maybe not in the first year, that was still very much, you know, just don't drink and don't talk about it. But definitely in the last 12 months, I've been talking to my work colleagues about it. And 9 times out of 10, people are quite curious, going, oh, interesting. Oh, okay. Oh, I didn't know that. Or tell me more about this community. And a few people have kind of said, oh, yeah, I definitely feel like I need to cut down on drinking as well. So it's massively impacted on how I work with people. And I feel confident in talking to people about it, knowing that removing alcohol is the best thing that they can do for their mental health. I've really, really, really enjoyed watching some of the community members talk openly about their mental health journey, going from being under services and needing to be on antidepressant medication and all sorts of things, and struggling daily with their mental health, starting to feel better and realizing that they didn't need any of those things. And it was, in fact, the alcohol that was actually causing all of those things. And that's just, to me, that's brilliant. That is absolutely amazing to witness. And I hope that one day I'll be out of a job, basically, because people realize that they can achieve, that they can get better on their own if they remove alcohol.
How many times have we seen that, Maz, now? Like, you've been a part of what we've been doing for the last 2 years, but how many times have we seen that exact thing? People go, you know what? This isn't just about having more energy. It's not just about consistency. My mental health has improved dramatically since removing alcohol. How many times?
I mean, it's almost on a daily basis, isn't it? But it makes sense, because alcohol robs you of your innate resources. It prevents you from realizing that you have skills and resources to be able to look after yourself. It keeps you kind of stuck in this cycle of self-hate, you know, this you feel bad, so you drink. You know, the drink makes you feel even worse. And then you drink because you feel worse. And then you kind of go round and round, and you're stuck in this cycle. And it also prevents you from feeling your feelings, feeling your emotions. And if you don't feel your emotions, you can't process them properly. And if you're not processing them, you're also not growing stronger from feeling them. So it just completely robs you of all of those innate strategies and resources that you have within you. So when you remove that, you realize, oh, actually, I can do this. You know, you break that cycle, and you start to understand that you are stronger and more capable than you realized.
Should we talk about the time that we were paddleboarding together underneath Snowdon in Wales? Good. It was a good trip. I enjoyed it. Shaz is probably going to mention how long your legs are, because every time we talk about you, Maz, we go, God, you've seen how long Maz's legs are.
And I don't like seeing Maz on events, because when Maz is in her shorts and I'm in my shorts, Maz just looks like this She's just got legs that go on for days. And there's me, and I look like a little dumpy sausage roll standing next to her. She's got, Maz, your legs are fantastic. I've got photos of your legs on my phone.
Is really, you just said that publicly, Shaz. In the moments where I wasn't in the water and desperately trying to get on my paddleboard again, we did actually have a conversation on the paddleboards, because with work, you've also taken a pretty big decision recently. And can you tell us about that? Can you tell us about, because obviously, you know, you are working for the NHS very successfully, and the NHS is a better place because you removed alcohol, as you've just said. You are better at what you do, which means the organisation is more effective as a whole, which is great. But you've also taken another step, and you are doing something really exciting that you didn't think that you'd be doing, but alcohol-free life is kind of giving you the confidence to do it. I'll stop talking. Over to you.
Okay, let's hope that I know what you're talking about. The counselling.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so I think it was back in February I sent Shaz a text message on one Thursday evening going, hey, so how would you feel if I offered my services to OTI as a counsellor? So I did my training in psychotherapeutic counselling about 10 years ago. And it's this, you know, these skills I've been using on a daily basis in my NHS job. But I never felt that confident enough or quite confident enough to be able to go out and go it alone. But what alcohol does is it builds this quiet confidence within you, and you start to feel a little bit invincible. And like you can
alcohol freeness.
Is that what I said?
You said what alcohol does. Yeah, no, it's alcohol slip. Doesn't. So, I'm pretty sure you don't mean that.
What alcohol removing alcohol does, yes, is it gives you this quiet confidence and this sense absolutely. Of invincibility. And you're like, well, if I can do this, what else can I do? And that's definitely been true for me in the second year. Again, the first year was very much about just don't drink. Second year is like, okay, I have this superpower. What can I do with it? And yeah, so since February, I've been sort of slowly building this private counselling practice. And for me, I want to focus on working with people who are sober curious or who have removed alcohol from their lives, and to just support and guide them through any challenges or any issues that might be coming up as a result of that. Using my own experience, you know, I didn't know what purpose alcohol served in my life fully until I removed it. And that's when stuff started coming up. That's when all the feels started coming up, things which I thought I'd sorted out, you know, previously. So I think it's important to know that you can talk to somebody about that, knowing that you're not alone in it. So I really wanted to give something back to the community. And yeah, it's very exciting.
So cool, isn't it, Shaz?
It's brilliant.
We can claim this, right? Yeah. Can we call this an OTI ripple? Because how amazing is it?
I think so.
You're now going to be doing this, and you're building this practice, and how many more people can you help? It's just.
But you know what, as well? Fabulous. I mean, even before we got to this point with Maz, which for me and Ben, there's nothing better. There's literally nothing better. Anybody that works with OTI, that volunteers with OTI, these people are all community members that have been with us a long time. And so they get us, they get what we're trying to do. And we've seen, excuse me, the growth. We've seen the journey. And it's because it's all bloody true. But Maz, I remember you. I remember our calls in the early days, the Zoom calls. And straight away, there was just a connection there. I thought, really like her. Really like her a lot. Because your voice is dead posh and mine is not. And I listen to you now, I'm like, oh, doesn't she sound lovely? Makes me sound really northern. My point was, you have given so much already to the Over the Influence community, whether you know it or not, because you reply to people's posts in the forum. You share these just most beautiful nuggets of wisdom that's all to do with mental health. And every time you write and share something, I just go, oh, and it just makes my shoulders go down. It just makes me take a breath that you're just so knowledgeable, but just so, I don't know, so naturally wanting to help other people, in particular, obviously, because it's what you do with their mental health. And I think that has been a gift for OTI.
I love that you think they're nuggets of wisdom, because in my mind they're just random ramblings. I think she's more than,
well, they're more than that.
And now you've given me a forum in which I can write these things down, and people are willing to read it. It's amazing.
They do.
But you know what, Shaz, I do want to help. And I think what's incredible about the community is people are vulnerable, they're open, they're authentic, and they're courageous, you know. And it's just, I feel so privileged to be part of the community, and it makes it easy for me to respond and reply to people, because they've already taken the first step, right, to be courageous, to open up and to be open and honest with how they're feeling. That makes it a lot easier for me to then be able to respond in an authentic, open and honest way as well. But absolutely, I want to help. I want to continue to help people, and I want to be able to support them on this journey and make it as easy as possible, because it's really worthwhile. It really is worthwhile. It doesn't matter what's coming up. It doesn't matter what challenges are being thrown at you. If you can navigate your way around it, it is absolutely worth it to keep going, because removing alcohol from your life is genuinely the best thing in the history of ever.
Come on then. You're going to call it a rambling. It'll come out like something that Voltaire's written. But what else is removing alcohol given to you then, Maz? Like, we talked about confidence. We've talked about how it's made you better at what you do. Like, what else? 2 years into this now, today, woohoo! What else have you taken from alcohol-free life?
Bloody loads. Friendships. I have made some incredible friends, you know, just really, really brilliant people. I never really did that much hiking before. I do now.
Yeah, that happens.
It's funny, that, isn't it? A lot of members say that. Bloody mountains, and you can't get them off.
I bought myself a new pair of hiking boots today as a celebration, because my other ones died a death after Ben Nevis.
This is brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, can I just say as well that I also bought new hiking boots today, word of a lie.
I need to before Edale, because I had a very wet foot in South Wales a couple of weeks ago.
Same. In fact, yeah. Mazzy's on Edale. We'll talk about that towards the end of the episode. Mazzy's
brilliant.
There.
Great.
22 miles of Maz, Ben. Chatting to you.
We'll do 30,000 steps. Maz will do 15.
I'm like one of those little tiny ponies running up behind you like this. Maz, wait, I'm coming.
You can hear Shaz just tap, 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 tap at the mountain.
What else? God, it's, you know what? I genuinely feel like I'm only just now starting to know who I am and why.
That's deep.
It is deep. I don't know how to do small talk. I don't know how to do the superficial stuff, but at the round old age of 36, I think I'm finally starting to understand who I am and what I need. And it's quite different to what I thought before. You know, drinking alcohol has a lot to answer for, but there's something so reassuring though, once you know who you are and what your needs are, that really, it changes everything. It changes how you behave, how you relate to yourself, and how you relate to other people. The friendships that I have are much stronger. I don't feel loneliness anymore. You know, I feel so connected to myself and so connected to the people around me and so connected to my environment and trees and nature, and everything's in technicolor, as Shaz says. You know, I don't get that sense of loneliness and emptiness, which I had for such a long time. Loads of good stuff.
I'm going to jump in there. I love what you're saying there, that the irony of it, isn't it? You know, when you are drinking and you are partying and you are at festivals with all these people, you mentioned a weekend, whatever it was, when we first started chatting, Maz, and you said that you didn't feel, and I love this term, socially replenished. Yeah. Tell us how you now feel replenished socially.
Well, I just feel like I've connected, and, you know, I was back in Norfolk this weekend just gone, and I'm more interested in people. You know, I have time. I actually want to sit and listen about what's going on in your life. We went for walks saying, what's happening? You know, what's going on in your life? And this is what's happening in my life. You have better conversations. I think I feel like I'm a better, more present friend to the people around me, because I'm a lot more curious and open, and I'm less preoccupied with my own stuff as well. I have a lot more headspace for the people around me. And I've had some really sweet feedback, actually, from from people who have known me for, you know, sort of 10 plus years, sort of saying, well, you know, we've seen you change and it's really lovely to see you blossom into this interesting, I think is the word that they used, this interesting but happy person. So I'm getting some really lovely feedback from them as well. So it's all really good.
I absolutely love that. And Ben refers to this a lot. And I think he's forgotten about it for this episode, so I'm going to bring it back. Do you remember, Ben? I think it was one of her amazing posts in the forum, and she said, to quote Ish, being sober is the least interesting thing about
me. Love it. It's one of my favourite ever.
It stuck with Ben. I'm pretty sure it's probably on his quotes board. It was such a fantastic way of describing yourself. And I love what you've said there, that your mates of however many years have said that you are interesting. You get to uncover the real you, don't you?
Yeah. I feel very lucky to have the friends that I do. I know that a few community members have really struggled with friendships, and, you know, and there have been some people who have definitely, there have been some people who I've kind of lost along the way, but I have a core group of friends who have kind of stuck by me, and I'll be like, generally don't care whether I drink or not, basically. They're just like, whatever, do you. And I feel really lucky for that. But getting the positive feedback from them is like, okay, let's keep going. And obviously I genuinely don't think I would have done this without the community, because every time that I log on, every time that I go onto the community and read a post, it's all reinforcement of all the good stuff, why you should keep going, you know. And I think I've said this lots of times before, but the fact that you've got so many people at different stages is so important. It's the people who are just starting off have evidence that if they keep going, it gets better. And then the people who are a bit further along, who might be going, okay, so I'm a couple of years in, maybe I could go back, it wasn't so bad. The people at the beginning would be like, no, don't do it. This is a terrible abort mission. This is a terrible idea. Stick to where you are, you know? So, yeah, it's amazing.
Maz, can I ask you please about your needs? I think that's really interesting because I think I probably need to think about it a bit more, because I think that I need breakfast, lunch and dinner. I need water. I need Jem to dress me before I leave the house so I don't look like a complete, because I would just go out in, you know, the same Villa top and the same tracky trousers every day if you gave me the chance. But I should probably think about it a bit more, because I imagine that your needs are deeper than that. What did you mean about your needs changing?
I think if I was going to summarise it, is that I need to do things for me. So I think I've self-confessed people pleaser. I think I have put that on the forum quite recently. This is not new information to me. Right. I've known that I'm a bit of a people pleaser, and I've always been motivated and driven to do things for other people. I hadn't quite realized to what extent, though. And what I have started to realize since removing alcohol is that it's really important to put myself first and reassess before I say something, before I agree to do something. First, ask myself a question: is this good for me? Am I doing it because I want to do it, or am I doing it because the other person wants me to do it and I'll feel bad otherwise? And that's for fellow people pleasers. I think saying no and putting yourself first, I think they'll understand just how difficult that is. But it's also been quite tricky, because a lot of relationships and a lot of friendships would have been built on me being the person who does just say yes to most things and will quite happily put myself on the back burner. So if I had to summarize it, I'm learning that what I need is to put myself first, and that's okay as well. And just to recognize that is an okay thing to do.
Okay. So that's not a selfish way to live your life, Maz. Just being devil's advocate here, because you know that I know that no is a complete sentence.
I see.
And I really like that phrase. No is a complete sentence. But by putting yourself first, is that not, you know, a bit selfish?
It's self-care, I think, more than anything.
Nice.
It is a bit like that. I know we use this analogy quite a lot when you're on the aeroplane, when the oxygen masks go down, put the oxygen mask on yourself first, because you're no good to anyone if you put it on everyone else first. And I think that's exactly it. when you look after yourself and when you put your needs first, you're making sure that you are the best version of yourself, which then ripples into everything that you do. So everyone else gets the better version of you as well. And nobody's losing. You're not losing, and neither are the people around you.
Mm. As Professor Green said, you're no good to anyone if you're no good to yourself.
Exactly. Exactly that.
You mentioned my quotes board, Shaz, and now I just can't stop looking at it.
Just stop.
Judge a man by his questions rather than his answers. I've chosen that one because we mentioned Voltaire earlier. That's a classic Voltaire. Do you want some more, Maz? You interested? Oh, Maz, I know you like this one. We talked about this one before. Hang on, that's not the right one. Here it is. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has. Margaret Mead.
That's a cracker, that right. One. Yes.
It's been a while since I've gone to the quotes board. Maybe we can do an entire episode on it next week.
Maybe not, but anyway, go on.
You like my quotes, don't you, Maz?
Oh, I love them. I love a quote.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What's your favourite? What's your favourite quote, Maz?
If you're going through hell, keep going.
Is that Winston Churchill?
I have no idea.
I'll Google it while you talk to Chaz.
Do you want my favourite quote? Are you going to skip me by?
Hang on. Is it Bross?
How dare you?
Is it Matt Goss?
No, it's not Matt Goss.
Okay.
Though I do love Matt Goss.
Is it Rick Astley?
It's not Rick Astley,
okay.
No.
Yeah, go on.
It's Sharon Hartley, circa 2022.
So your favourite quote is your own.
Never do anything half-assed. Always use your full ass.
One of
full
my favourites.
Stop. Get that on your quote.
I think
board.
I have used that. Put your full ass into it.
Thank you,
quote Shaz.
Isn't it bad when you make yourself laugh? It's
my favourite quote is actually from me.
That's what alcohol free does to you. That quite confidence, right?
It's my new confidence, all right, and just deal with it, Ben. It's part of my journey, thanks.
That's really made me laugh. You know, I'm not on my own quotes board.
Well, you should be.
Yeah, I need to. Anyway.
Oh, God. Right, where were we?
You said you wanted to talk to Maz about walking up the Edale Killer Loop.
Yeah.
Do you want to? Yeah? Looking forward to it, Maz?
We need to drop the word killer. Drop the word killer.
That's what it's called, isn't it? Isn't it called the Edale Killer Loop? Isn't that what?
It's called the Edale Skyline. That's what you've nicknamed it.
No. I think it's colloquially. If hikers out there, please email me, ben@overtheinfluence.co.uk. Do we all know it as the Edale Killer Loop, or is that just from the last time we went? Because it was hard.
Yeah,
it's
a monster of a trek. It's happening. It's our final event, actually, of the OTI Outdoor Adventure Season. Cannot wait to see Maz. Maz, I feel like, I don't know, maybe we knew each other in a previous life. I've no idea, but I just feel like I've known you for so, so long.
We did share a room at Ben Nevis, I think, that hostel.
Yeah, that was a whole new level of getting to know your mates, wasn't it?
Apparently you heard me screaming in the middle of the night. So.
Oh, God. Oh, and actually, I don't like you. I've remembered. Yeah. I remembered what you did. Yeah. Tell Ben what you did.
Well, I've been accused of this. There's no actual evidence. But apparently I was screaming in the middle of the night and I woke poor Shaz and Charlie up. But what there is evidence is Shaz snoring.
Wait. What do you, do you mean, like, what kind of scream?
Then I was asleep. I have no recollection of this.
It was a scream of utter terror. It was the stuff of nightmares.
Apparently
it
was heard in other rooms as well. This is what's worse, is I came out in the morning and I'm like, is that what that was? And I'm like, yeah, that was me.
There's always something that happens. We were walking while Shaz is looking for this. We were going up Penny Fan a couple of weeks ago.
You had great
weather. And we were talking
about
previous. Oh, it was amazing. I think it was the best kind of view from the top we've ever had on an OTI event. It was just 360 and completely and utterly glorious. Can't wait to go back to South Wales. Maybe not staying in. I won't name the hotel, but maybe not staying in the same hotel in Merthyr Tydfil that I stayed in because it was basic. It was basic. But community member David, he said to me, ah, yes, on my first ever OTI event, I saw your ass. Oh, okay. Because I got changed in his tent so we could go paddleboarding, actually, Maz. So apologies to David. We do get, it's not, we look, we're all thrown into these events and you just, deal with the unexpected, don't you? Well, it's probably the easiest way. Have you found what you did, what you're looking for, Shaz?
Right. What date did we go to Ben Nevis?
I need to stop talking about my bum.
Are you trying to find the video of you, not the video, the voice note of you snoring?
It was an interesting. It was an interesting stay, wasn't it, Roz? It really was.
I loved it. Between Matt, I think we should hire out those hostels again. That was brilliant. I loved, and the communal dinner. It was so lovely having Tony and Reese cook for everyone. It was great.
Maz, it has been an absolute pleasure. I'm so glad that our paths crossed all that time ago. I'm just chuffed to bits. I think the world of you. The community thinks the world of you. Thank you so, so much. Huge congratulations on speaking to us today on your 2 years flipping alcohol-free. It is awesome. Before you go, Maz, if people listening to this would like to get in touch with regards to your counselling, can they do that? And if so, where can they find the information?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you are part of the OTI community, then you can book on, I think it's under the member resources. So initially I offer a half an hour free discovery call where we'll just have a chat. I think it's worth noting that everything is fully confidential as well. And so if you're worried, because I'm also a community member, then it's absolutely what we discuss doesn't go any further than our sessions. And if you're outside of the community, you can email me on mgcounsellinguk@gmail.com.
Give us that one more time, Maz. Just people are searching for their pen. Yeah.
mgcounsellinguk@gmail.com. And you can also find me and my profile on the National Counselling and Psychotherapy Society. Sorry.
I can see why that took a second.
And that gives you an idea of how I work, the types of approaches that I use, and yeah.
Amazing. Maz, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for chatting with us.
Thanks so much, guys, and I'll see you at eDale.